Hi everyone, welcome to an episode of the Tennis.com podcast with special guest Vashik Pospisil. I'm Nina Pancik, your host, and I'll be joined by Irina Falcone. Vashik is fresh from a final run in Sofia to wrap up his 2020 season, which saw him get up to number 61 in the rankings. The 30-year-old Canadian has been ranked as high as number 24 back in 2014, which happens to be the year he won the Wimbledon doubles title with Jack Sock. We talk about how his back surgery and time off actually changed his career for the better, and how he got involved in the mushroom supplement called Hecate. And most of all, we talk about the PTPA, the Professional Tennis Players Association. It's something that he has founded with Novak Djokovic, and it has been in the headlines a lot. So we get to hear Vashik's perspective, how it started, why it started, why it's important, how it interacts with the ATP player council, and what the future is for the PTPA. All right, let's hear from Vashik. Vashik, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be on.
So where are you right now? I see you're in a hotel room.
Yeah, I'm actually in Belgrade right now waiting for my 2 week. There's like this 2 week window where you can't be in a red zone country before you can go back into the States. So I have like 1 day left and then I'm heading back to Florida tomorrow actually.
So is it technically quarantine?
It's not quarantine, but it's just one of the, you know, the new rules that the US Customs has where you can't be in a red zone country for 2 weeks before you can enter, unless you have like a special waiver or exemption, which I don't have. So I'm waiting for that 2 week period to kind of run out and then I'll be able to go back.
That's nuts. I mean, I knew that non-citizens and non-green card holders couldn't just come back and forth to the US, but I didn't know about the non-red zone option. So Belgrade, Serbia was chosen because...
Because it was a short drive from Sofia and it was an easy drive. You didn't need anything to cross into Serbia. And then it's one of the few places that's not a red zone in Europe. So just came here. One of my friends is here and hanging out and heading back soon.
So are you officially done with the season? We can assume that Sofia was the last one and you did phenomenal. Congratulations, by the way, making finals. Unbelievable performance. How'd you feel out there?
Thanks. Season's done. So it was a great week, great way to end it. And Sofia played really well. And I had a good feeling about the tournament right from my first hit on center court, which is funny. I told my coach, I was like, oh, like I got to make sure this is on my schedule every year. I love the conditions here. And then I almost lost in the first round. I was just a couple of points away. My opponent served for the match and I was down 4-love in the third set breaker. And then I just, came back and then had a good run and was close to taking it. But obviously Yannick's a huge talent and it was a tough match, but just, you know, thrilled to have made the final. It was a good week.
So obviously you're shutting it down and 2020, as we know, has been very strange and you probably haven't played a whole lot of tennis. What does the end of 2020 look like for you? I know that Australia is kind of up in the air at the moment, but are you going back to the US? Are you going to Canada, Bahamas? I mean, you have options.
Yeah, I'm going to the US to Bradenton, the ING Academy, and I'll be there. I'll do a bit of training there, and then I'll probably head back to Europe to do some training, and then. And then I'll see. I mean, I have no idea what the schedule is going to look like, but it looks like I'll be flying to Australia. Yeah, I mean, on the first, we heard that there's no flying in during the month of December. So, to be honest, I don't even know what I'm going to do yet. So it's a tough situation.
It's been a really weird year, but you're ranked number 61 right now. You've got to feel good given how short the season was that you've managed to do so much, two finals this year, and then that fourth round at the US Open was huge, right?
Yeah, it was a great year for me. I mean, great year on court and great season, considering there were, you know, quite few. I mean, we didn't really play that much tennis. But two finals and a fourth round US Open. And yeah, it was great. I mean, I'm playing well. I'm feeling good, mentally. I'm in a good spot. And physically, I'm as feeling great. I mean, I haven't had any back issues since the surgery, which has been amazing. And kind of didn't even realize how it felt to be, feeling this good on the court physically for, weeks on end. I remember, I think last like 5-6 years, I'd always be able to go for like 3-4 weeks without some kind of issue, and then my back would blow out or something, and I just took that as like normal part of the sport. And I was like, okay, well, everyone's dealing with this kind of stuff. And then, it wasn't until I had my surgery in 2019 and I recovered, and I've my knock on wood every time I say it, but my body's been really holding up well. I've had a few niggles, along the way, but feeling great physically and mentally and playing well.
Okay. But back surgery, that must've been absolutely terrifying, because I saw you just a few months after. I think I saw you Indian Wells. That would have been March 2019, and you were like functioning like a human. But
I would have been 25 pounds overweight then when you saw me. I gained 24 pounds. I remember 24 pounds exactly.
That's very specific.
That was a lot. Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Okay, but you still had back surgery, so it's a good excuse.
Yeah, and I actually made a conscious decision. I was like, you know what? Like, I've been so strict with myself and diet and training and tennis and just everything my whole career. And I, was obviously out indefinitely. It was going to be, I didn't hold a racket for 5 months. I was like, you know what? I'm going to eat whatever I want. I'm going to do a whole training period after this when I recover. And so I'm just going to enjoy my life. And then, I knew I was going to gain weight, and I didn't care. I just like decided I would and just enjoy myself. And then, it was actually a really nice reset, a little bit of a mental break, and then I just came back fresh.
That's so nice to hear. Just like gain 25 pounds. Yeah, that's no big deal. So in the I'm gonna eat whatever I want, was maple syrup part of your diet as well? Or
yeah, with my pancakes for sure in the morning. I had pancakes every day, but yeah, I wasn't eating healthy. Let's put it that way. I was, I let loose big time.
But you didn't let loose this time when the shutdown happened, because you came out so strong. I mean, you still came out strong at the US Open last year. I remember you got a really big win over Karen Khachanov, so it was still good. But this year, You had this 6-month period. What did you do? Because you crushed it coming right out of the gates.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I still kind of relaxed a bit. Believe it or not, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm just going to, who knows how long this is going to be. I just took some time off, but I was working on a company that I co-founded, and I was obviously busy with Tennis United, and I was staying in shape. I mean, I was trying to, I mean, I took a decent break from tennis. I wasn't really playing too much. I hit like once or twice a week, but I was running and I was trying to stay like strong and ready for a kind of like a preseason type training block whenever we had news that the tour would start up. So again, I just had, I kind of shut things down a little bit until, we heard that tennis was starting up. Then I, flew my coach in and I started training a lot and just did a whole, training block as you normally would before the season would start up. So of course, going into the US Open, I wasn't sure. I was kind of like, I wasn't sure how to go, and had no matches in preparation. First round was a little bit, just kind of feeling my way around there. And then it was still, just a great, great week. And it was nice to kind of pick up confidence right from the first event back.
One of the things that I constantly hear is just how tennis players don't really have an off season per se. They don't really have a break. It's an ongoing thing. During this COVID time, you kind of had a break, your body rested. Do you feel like you're going to use the kind of things that you learned this year for the rest of your career?
Yeah, for sure. I think the my biggest I guess what for me was having surgery, and that break was the most like transformational, kind of period of my career, if I can call it that. I don't know. I think that's where I really had the biggest paradigm shift, and I just completely changed. I don't know. I matured a lot. I came back. I got really busy with off court, ventures, and I came back as a much more confident person and player, and put a little bit less stress on myself on court, because I had all these great things happening off court, and And so, you know, that along with just being also thrilled that I was even able to compete at the high level, because that was my first surgery. I didn't know how I would recover. So I was just, you know, grateful that I was feeling so good physically. And so I think that was a real learning period there, where I just had a whole new approach and kind of the way I you know, perceived tennis in my career and my life just completely changed. And then, so that is something that obviously now is you know, I'll be looking at life a little bit differently for the rest of my career. So definitely learned a lot during that period there when I had my surgery and my break from tennis.
Kind of like when Federer had that knee surgery and came back and won the Australian Open, right? Same.
yeah, pretty much. Exactly the same.
Okay, so Off-Court Ventures, one of them is you co-founded a company that is a mushroom supplement called Hecate. So tell us about that, because we're intrigued and unfamiliar with mushrooms.
Yeah, so it's not the magic mushroom that you know, a lot of people have asked me that question. Oh, like, you know, what is it, the magic? Well, no, it's basically so functional mushrooms are a superfood. So 11 of the top 50 superfoods in the world are actually functional mushrooms. So, you know, reishi, cordyceps, chaga, and lion's mane are four of those 11, which we put into our first product that we launched, which is a cocoa powder. And they have some super impressive benefits, both mental and physical. And actually, my nutritionist had recommended that I start taking mushroom supplements to help with my recovery process. Just in anti-inflammatory, there's you know, anti-stress. I have so many, and this chaga is one of the most powerful antioxidants in the world. So it had all these amazing benefits, and I started taking them. And around the same time, one of my really close friends, you know, brought this idea forward to me. And it was just kind of, you know, it was a little bit ironic that I was started taking, you know, mushroom supplements, and I was really, really passionate about it and into it and really believed in it. And it's been a part of my morning routine ever since I was, you know, recovering from surgery. And I said, well, why not start our own brand and our own product? So yeah, it's super exciting. We've had our soft launch, which, you know, you've seen through my page and US Open, and we're doing a real big launch early next year. So that'll be super exciting. But obviously you can still get the product now on the website, Hecate.com. Yeah, the reviews are great, and the people that have been trying it love it. And I obviously swear by it, and I think it's been a huge part of my return. I mean, to be completely honest, like sorry, I'm rambling, but I've just felt like it's really helped my recovery more than anything. I'm less sore after my matches, and so it's super cool to actually feel the benefits of a supplement. So I'm stoked.
Recovery is like the most important thing in athletes that play all year long. So where did the name come from?
Well, it was actually my business partner that came up with the name. So Hecate is actually the Greek goddess of magic. So, you know, it's not magic mushroom, but it's but they're magical, right? So so it was super cool name, and yeah, people like it, and I think it's yeah, it's cool. We're gonna have, you know, we have more products in the pipeline, and we have some really cool partners that we're working with currently, and that we have kind of on the horizon. So I think it'll be really cool. Early stages right now, but I think you know, it'll be something that we can really grow into something great that can help a lot of people.
What does it taste like? I have to know.
Well, it's actually the mushrooms themselves are quite bitter. So if you took like anything, if lion's mane or chaga on its own, it would be quite bitter to the taste. You know, it doesn't taste great. It's like anything that's healthy, you know, usually it doesn't taste that great, but we have it mixed with cocoa powder and monk fruit, and it's all natural, organic, you know, obviously ingredients and mushrooms. And so ours is it's a cocoa powder that you mix either in your coffee, or I put it in my oatmeal, and it's, so it's like, it has a really nice chocolatey flavor, to it. That's our first product. We're coming out with a matcha blend soon. And, so I'll have to send you some.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Chocolate always makes things better. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How involved are you though? Like, how involved are you in like the day to day of like a business? Because that sounds like it's a lot of work, and you still have this whole tennis career thing going.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very involved in, obviously, in all the important calls. And you know, early on during COVID, before the tennis started up, I was day to day, you know, doing everything with the guys, with two co-founders. And now that we've kind of established ourselves a little bit, I'm obviously not on the ops side. I'm more of, you know, I take care of more, you know, raising money and the vision. We're all kind of wearing a lot of hats right now as it's early, but we've made some great hires and we're really going to build a management team and that's just all like really right around the corner. So I'm not too luckily right now. I'm not spending too much time on it because as I said, it's quite well established but of course I'm as one of the directors of the company and co-founders, I'm involved in all the important calls.
Hi everyone, you're listening to an episode of the tennis.com podcast with special guest Vasek Pospisil. He's giving us all the intel on his secret mushroom supplement, Hikari. Keep listening. My mom's been forcing vitamins down my throat since I was 4, and I've only just realized there's actually a benefit to it. I think last year I was like, yeah, this is actually doing something for me.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're all maturing and growing. So in other off-court news you've been working on, tell us about the professional, I've messed it up.
Tennis
badly.
Players.
Yes.
Association.
Professional Tennis Players Association.
PTPA.
PTPA. Yeah. That's way smoother. That launched in August. You are a huge part of this. It's been in the news recently because of different moving parts. We don't really understand everything. Can you give us your take on what it is and what the goal is and what's happening now?
Yeah. So basically the PTPA is something that Novak Djokovic and I have started. There's so much information out there that's like, and like wrongly, it's just, there's a lot of politics and it's, you know, it is what it is, but the whole purpose of the PTPA is strictly to, like organize and unite the players and have representation and be represented in a proper way where we actually have, the ability to impact major decisions that are made that affect our livelihoods and our lives, right? So most other major sports have an association that represents solely the player's best interests, and then they're able to, you know, go with this association towards, you know, to the, let's say, in NHL, and negotiate with the league and be business partners. You know, you come to the table, you have one side, you have another, you come to a compromise, you make a good, you know, business agreement and you move forward. And in tennis, we really don't have that. Like we really don't. For those that don't know is the ATP is, the way the bylaws are written, it is basically, we have, you know, the tournaments and we have the player side and it's 50-50, except, the players actually have no way of affecting any decisions that are made. So it's quite complicated without getting into all the details of the bylaws of the ATP, but basically the whole point of the PTPA is to unite the players and be able to actually have a say in the tour and our livelihoods and have transparency with you know, the tournaments, how they're running, you know, the financials, data, ticket sales, everything. We basically don't have any information, and the tournaments don't need to provide anything and don't need to have, you know, don't need to be transparent at all. And that's not a business partnership. And especially when we're the, you know, what the product where people come and pay money to watch the players play. And so it's nothing confrontational. We're not here to be confrontational at all. It's strictly just, you know, almost like a democratic principle, like, well, okay, well, we want to have a say and input and be able to actually affect these decisions. So yeah,
so
in a nutshell,
it wouldn't be considered a union then?
No. Okay. No, it's not a union. I mean, in many ways it could act as a union, but it's not a union. It's not it's an association. Legally, it's not actually deemed a union, so it's an association.
So I'm just curious, you explained it to us beautifully, might I add, but I'm just curious from now, like, what does that mean, really? Like, are you going to integrate, like, go ahead.
So right now we're obviously, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, as the expression goes, but right now is we are in the middle of drafting the bylaws, which is basically the structure and everything written on a contract to how it would actually operate. And so the idea is that we'll get the bylaws drafted and we'll gather, you know, the support from the players and also make key hires where we actually have real professionals and that are representing just the players' best interests, so that, you know, and where, be it lawyers, be it you know, whoever we need to actually help run this organization, to give it, you know, also credibility and so we're really just at the I would say, how would I put it, we're just really building it right now and getting everybody that we need. And also the one of the most important things that we're trying to obviously avoid is conflict of interest, because the ATP, the tennis tour, has tremendous conflict of interest right now, with everybody from who's on the board. It's so intertwined. It's like no other sport out there. And it's unfortunate that it's gotten to this point, and it needs to be a little bit cleaned up. And unfortunately the reality is, that it's hurting the players. You know, I think, so it's just something needed to be done. And I just kind of had enough of it. I'm a man of principle. And when I could see that things were being run the way they were, and a lot of times dirty politics and just the players are being lied to and brainwashed, and it's just, it's really not good. So I'd have to say that's the whole purpose of this.
But how did you and Novak begin working together? Was it something that he approached you? Did you approach him? It just seems like a really unexpected duo. No offense, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. No, none taken. So what happened was when I joined, just a little bit of backstory, you know, when I had surgery, I'll go even before that. I joined the council because I wanted to, you know, originally wanted to see, well, what is happening? Why are we having all these player issues? So many, I mean, players are constantly, you know, complaining about how things are run and everything from the revenue share to representation to just you name it, right? So I was like, well, what is going on? So I joined the council and I realized that it was a very, very broken system. And so at that point when I had surgery, I was like, well, you know, this is never going to change unless I try to actually do something about this, and someone's got to do it. So I had all this time on my hands, and that's when I approached the global chair at Norton Rose, which Norton Rose is one of the largest law firms in the world. They're in 51 different cities across major cities across the globe. And so I approached the global chair to see if he'd be able to work with the players if I got a significant number to sign on an engagement letter with him. And so we agreed to the terms, and then I started recruiting players and got to 80 signatures of the top 100 on the men's side, and in the, I think Sloan Stevens and Madison Keys, they worked together and they got close to 80, the top 100 women. So, and at that point, I mean, I during that whole period, I approached Novak as well to see if he would support it, and which he did, and we just kind of were very aligned with as our, you know, 80 of the top 100 guys with some of the issues that were going on, and obviously we were on the council as well. So and then he just fully supported it, and then we just started doing it together, and it's been a good journey. It's been, you know, a lot of learning lessons, very challenging. You're really going up against kind of the Goliath of tennis. And it's not easy. They have a lot of resources. They have, you know, everything from media to you name it, right? So it hasn't been an easy battle, but you got to keep fighting for the right cause and things, you know, and what you believe in. So quite the learning experience.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to an episode of the Tennis.com podcast with special guest Vasek Pospisil. we find out how he became the co-founder of the PTPA. Keep listening. Is there any awkwardness then when you go to ATP tournaments? Anyone like upset with you? Or because it sounds like you guys are trying to not conflict with them at all, but it does sound like you're not in agreement completely. So is there any weirdness?
No. I mean, you know what? The super majority, I would say that, you know, time will tell, but I think most players get it. You know, most players are there are a few that are kind of against it, but I would say the majority is, you know, are not against it, and for the right reason, because there's nothing malicious here whatsoever. It's just like, hey, like, we're here, we're players, like, you know, respect us, let's have, we're you know, let's be partners in this business, is that is tennis, unfortunately. Well, I mean, it's a business, right? So I'm still super optimistic because at the end of the day, all the players are in the same boat. And for those that maybe some don't quite understand because they don't have a full, you know, picture of what the situation is, and soon enough they will. And for those that, you know, maybe they don't understand the real dynamics of the tour and what really goes on. And I think once they do, then there's, you know, I think there's no reason they wouldn't support something like the PTPA, because again, it's not like we're coming in with a, you know, to destroy something, like that's not it at all, right?
You're seeking transparency, which that's totally
fair. Yeah.
And then
exactly.
The ATP Council lately has been a topic. So when you guys first resigned in August, I think it was you, Novak, Sam, Querrey, and John Isner. Was that because you wanted to leave or because you were told to leave? And then now, are you trying to get back in? Like, what's the council situation? Because I don't get it at all either.
Yeah. So when we started the PTPA, it was we were forced out pretty much. I mean, for whatever reason. I mean, we were forced out at the time, and stating conflict of interest, which really, when you looked at it, was like, well, PTPA is supposed to represent the players, you know, the interests of the players, and so is the council. So, you know, obviously PTPA hasn't even been fully established yet. So it's not like, right. But so that was a situation then. And then actually now during these elections, you know, Novak and myself had been nominated by other players. So we didn't seek nomination. There were players that wanted us there, and they put us on the list. And so now this whole thing, you know, has come out, and I just need to speak with Novak. I mean, when he finishes to see, you know, what it is that we're going to do with the situation. But obviously this was something that was kind of thrown on us right now, because players obviously want us there to represent them. And it's still currently, until the PTPA is fully, you know, established, it still is currently the only platform where you can represent players at some capacity, you know, quite ineffectively, but it is, you know, however minor of an impact you can have, that is the only area that you can do that currently, right? So this is to be determined how we're going to handle this right now. We have to have that call and go from there, but I'm not gonna make any statements on that further.
Yeah, because what I'd heard was, well, from Novak and at the ATP finals, was that they were told, or he was told, you can't run actually because it's a conflict of interest. And I was like, well, we didn't know that was an issue, that wasn't clear. So it sounds things are in the works.
Well, exactly. So that was the other thing is when the ATP had found out that we were on the list, they created overnight a new law, a new bylaw in the ATP to prevent us from actually being able to go there and represent the players, saying, you know, but it's okay that you have, you know, IMG representative that the own, you know, on the board, and there's such or are like, it's, I mean, it blows my mind that it's okay that all these other insane conflicts of interest, like in no other sport in the world, like they give a pass to that. That's no problem. But these two tennis players, you know, shouldn't be able to represent the players because they're trying to do something else. So we're going to create a law right now overnight that the board is going to pass, and we're going to stop them from going and you know, it's crazy. It just shows you how desperate they are to maintain you know, yeah, it's upsetting, but it's reality. You know?
In a sense though, you have to kind of feel that you're going in the right direction because they're clearly threatened. Like there's a reason why this is all happening and you're obviously ruffling some feathers and, you know, it's clear that there is a problem if they are that threatened by you guys.
Well, absolutely. I mean, why, like you nailed it, right? It's like, what is so wrong about having like a player group being represented by professionals that like, if everything is run so smoothly and everything, I mean, if everything is so fair to the players and everybody, why are they fighting this so like so hard, right? It's so of course there's issues there, right? I mean, everyone wants their business to be as profitable as possible, or, you know, that's just the essence of it, right? In general, I mean, so I get it that they're trying to protect their business and their income, I mean, or their, you know, profitability, let's say the Grand Slams. I mean, I'm not even going to get into the Grand Slams, but that's the biggest, you know, issue of all, probably the amount of you know, money that they earn, and tennis only has 100 players that are making, like, you know, top 100 that are making a living, and then everybody else is suffering and all these other, you know, so it's, there's, yeah, I think it should be very easy for at least 300 players from the men's and 300 from the women's side, at least to be able to have a nice, you know, living and be able to, you know, be profitable with their tennis careers. But that's currently not the case.
Gosh, it takes, I think,
and the money's there.
The money is there. You know, there's so much
there.
Money.
Like, so yeah, it's, you know, but
it takes a lot of balls to do all this. So it's noble, but also needed, as you've said. And it sounds like 2021 is going to be a big year for seeing what happens with all of that as well. I've also have a similar question in a way. Is Tennis United going to come back in 2021?
Oh, I don't know. It took up quite a bit of time originally, and which time that I had, you know, during the pandemic and so I'm not sure. I don't know if I'll be invited back, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, to be honest. Like I would love to. I had a great time. Honestly, I think Bethany was pretty much doing 90% of it, was responsible for 90% of the success of that show, and I was just kind of tagging along, and she was unbelievable. So I don't know if Tennis United really needs me at the end of the day, but it was fun. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I was staying busy during the pandemic, and it was so fun to interview these legends of the game and you know, just Gretzky and Nash, for example, which obviously as a Canadian, they're two legends that I was looked up to, and so it was a lot of fun. I mean, I would definitely, you know, maybe do a couple episodes again at some point if they'll take me back.
You seem like a natural. You know, it sounds like at least it's good for you in terms of like building your skills and networking and like being a face. I think that in a way maybe has helped you because you became more popular with your colleagues, but also with fans. Like everyone knows you already, but even more when you're on like TV pretty much all the time. It helps.
Yeah, for sure. No, it was fun. I mean, like I said, you know, it was fun and it was cool to connect with the fans and the players you know, have things be a little bit more lighthearted than I feel like, you know, sometimes tennis is so serious. Well, as from my side anyways, this is especially
it
now
is.
With,
it
you
is.
Know, so it's, yeah, but it was fun.
So I think this is going to probably be the last question, Nina, but, you know, 2021, obviously there's a lot of things that are up in the air. But if there is some sort of normalcy to what the tour is going to be like next year, what are some goals? What's the future hold like next year for what you'd like to accomplish and what you and your team are looking to do next year?
Yeah, I mean, if we have a somewhat normal year, it'd be. I mean, I've been kind of you know, eyeing my top 50 return. I feel like I want to get back to top 50. I'm not too far now. You know, 61, which is great, and obviously. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'd love to get back in the top 30 and go higher, maybe, you know, get my first title would be great. I obviously feel like there's, you know, I'm playing some of the best tennis of my career right now. So you know, who knows what's ahead for me on the court. I feel like I'm improving every week, or every month, let's say, to put it more realistically. Like every month, I feel like I'm getting a little bit better. So that's good. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, sky's the limit, right? If you believe in it, and so even though I'm getting a little bit older, I think maybe, you know, 10 years ago, I'd feel like I'm getting too old to make any kind of a you know, new milestone runs or anything. But now that everyone's in their mid 30s playing the best tennis of their careers, then maybe I got something up my sleeve coming soon.
Yes, trust me. You are not old. You are doing just fine. Yeah. Well, we look forward to seeing what 2021 has to offer you on court and off court. And thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Bashik.
Thanks, guys.
From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. You can also see the videos of our episodes on Tennis Channel's YouTube page and tennis.com's Facebook page. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer and video editor Christina Koseva, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.